Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and we're happy to tell you today that the podcast is sponsored by Simply Safe Home Security. Protect your home the smart way without the expensive long-term contracts using Simply Safe Home Security. Visit simplysafe.com/ricochet. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. And Jim, our good martini actually comes to us from Donald Trump. He has released a video, not making a press conference or taking questions from the press. He's had his own ordeals with the press this week that we could get into but won't. He's released a video basically saying what he's going to do through executive action on day one. Here is an extended excerpt from that video.
On energy, I will cancel job-killing restrictions on the production of American energy, including shale energy and clean coal, creating many millions of high-paying jobs. On regulation, I will formulate a rule which says that for every one new regulation, two old regulations must be eliminated. So important. On national security, I will ask the Department of Defense and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to develop a comprehensive plan to protect America's vital infrastructure from cyber attacks and all other form of attacks. On immigration, I will direct the Department of Labor to investigate all abuses of visa programs that undercut the American worker. On ethics reform, as part of our plan to drain the swamp, we will impose a 5-year ban on executive officials becoming lobbyists after they leave the administration, and a lifetime ban on executive officials lobbying on behalf of a foreign government.
So several things there. He actually led off with TPP, saying he would officially announce that we are separating ourselves from that agreement, which comes as no surprise. Jim, some of these will be more popular with conservatives than others. Obviously, the ability to harness domestic energy is good. Getting serious about cybersecurity, visa fraud, ethics reform, very good. Pence made that announcement last week when it came to the transition. I think if that had been a Democratic incoming administration, that would have been hailed as the greatest ethics thing ever, that not getting a lot of attention. The regulation thing is good. I just think the two-for-one gimmick is a little bit odd. You should probably just go after the ones you think are stupid and unproductive and get rid of them. But overall, I think conservatives are right to be pretty excited about this.
There's really not much to complain about. I think, as you pointed out, the idea is not really the number of regulations removed, as in, you know, make sure you get rid of the bad ones. It's not quantity, it's quality, I would argue. So I find it a little odd that he did not mention the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. I know that's clearly a very high priority of the folks in Congress, but it may be the matter of figuring out what to replace it with. He's going to hold things up a little bit there. You know, didn't talk a lot about the wall or the Iran nuclear deal or the tax code. But again, you know, we're talking about the day one agenda, and he's got plenty of time in the 100 days. And, you know, do you know what follows the first 100 days of an administration, Greg?
All the media reports on the first 100 days?
True, but I also say the 101st day.
That's true.
There's nothing that says you can't pass something on day 101 or 105. The real question is how much can he get done in that first year? And certainly, it's like an ambitious agenda. He's going to have a mostly friendly Congress when it comes to this, and he should be able to get quite a bit done. I think it means a lot that this is the first time we've really heard much from Trump since his meeting in the Oval Office with President Obama, meaning that he's spent the last week, I would assume, you know, presumably working, not running around doing a victory tour. I know he took his family out to the steak dinner, and the press was in a tizzy about that. But, you know, he's been conducting the interviews about the cabinet spots and naming some folks and meeting with folks like Romney and Nikki Haley and apparently Rick Perry, all folks who were critical of him during the primary, and apparently seems very magnanimous that he's willing to meet with them and possibly put them in his cabinet. So, you know, so far, Greg, it looks like Trump is working. And that's a good thing to see in a president, that that he has buckled down and is focusing on this. And this isn't just some lark to be celebrity in chief. So, you know, it's obviously still very, very early, but a good take so far, and with the occasional bumps in the road, and maybe that's a good segue to our next martini.
Exactly, because here's the other story that broke this morning, and it broke on Morning Joe. At least that's where our audio is coming from, but I think the statement went out to more places than that. Here's Mika Brzezinski breaking the news.
We begin now with breaking news. A source with direct knowledge of Donald Trump's thinking tells Morning Joe that the president-elect will not pursue any investigations into Hillary Clinton for her use of a private email server and also for the questions surrounding the Clinton Foundation. Trump feels Clinton has, quote, been through enough. This development comes after he said this in his interview with 60 Minutes 10 days ago.
I'm going to think about it. She did some bad things.
A special prosecutor?
I don't want to hurt them. I don't want to hurt them. They're good people. I don't want to hurt them.
They're good people? Well, we can debate that another time. But here's later Joe Scarborough and David Ignatius talking about what a great decision this is because, heaven forbid, we prosecute somebody for crimes.
I don't think you could say they're echoes of 1974 when Ford pardon Nixon. But at the same time, I'm sure there are going to be a lot of members of Trump's base that are going to be angry that he did this. But you just don't want to go into a new year chasing somebody out of public life. It just seems it's just not good for the country.
Yeah, there are two reasons why this makes sense. One, it's just not seemly for an incoming administration to prosecute or seek to prosecute the actions of his rival in the election. It just doesn't look good. It's what happens in banana republics.
Well, it happens in banana republics when the only reason they're prosecuted is because they were the political rival. Jim, a couple things here. As Scarborough pointed out, a lot of Trump supporters are going to be scratching their heads on this because in the second debate at the town hall, he said he was going to appoint a special prosecutor to look into this. Obviously, he's changed his mind on this. But also, as somebody else on the Morning Joe panel later pointed out, it's not his call. The FBI is already investigating the Clinton Foundation, and they may decide or may not decide to pursue charges there. And ultimately, if anybody else has to make a call on that, it would probably be the Attorney General if they want to appoint a special prosecutor. So it's odd that Trump would be inserting himself into here.
Thank you, Greg, because that really seemed like kind of an important point to meet in all to make in all this. This is really magnanimous if she has not committed a crime. Alternately, it's called letting her get away with it. If she did not commit a crime, which, you know, I think you can, you know, sense the skepticism in my voice, but let's suppose that everything she did on the up was on the up and up, that every donation to the Clinton Foundation from foreign sources did not meet any bribery standard, that no prosecutor could find a quid pro quo that can be demonstrated. They look at the precedent set by the Supreme Court tossing out the conviction of Bob McDonnell. All right, well, then I guess it's fair. But in that case, he's not really doing her any favors. He's, you know, basically saying, I'm not going to prosecute when she, in fact, didn't do any crime. But if she did do crimes, you know, Greg, I don't know, we just spent a good portion of a year talking about how utterly inappropriate it was that foreign governments were giving giant piles of money to the Clinton Foundation under the presuming expectation that they were either purchasing goodwill or maybe had specific favors in mind with the future Hillary Clinton administration. This is bad. This is immoral. This is illegal. I want this deterred in the future. And if the idea is, well, if you lose the election, that's suffering enough. That's punishment enough. I have a very hard time getting around this. Also, wasn't, Greg, maybe I hallucinated all this. Wasn't lock her up this giant chant at the Republican convention?
Indeed.
This Emily Letella? Never mind.
It's amazing what happens once you win. But I have a feeling that if there were a Republican who had Hillary Clinton's shady record, who was then defeated, that I don't think the Morning Joe panel would be so excited to see her not be facing any sort of potential further investigation or even prosecution. Just a hunch, but that's my gut feeling on that one.
I have a hard time believing that. I think there's a lot of Clinton-friendly folks who now feel like, you know, she should be allowed to enjoy her golden years and enjoy retirement, which I don't mind as long as she didn't commit a crime. Now, look, if the FBI looks at this and says, we can't prove anything, fine. The idea of the email investigation being effectively closed, look, you and I talked about this all summer long and into the fall, fine, but it was the Clinton Foundation bribery. I felt like it still needed a further full investigation. And the idea that Trump has said, remember the theory, Greg, that Trump was actually a stalking horse for the Clintons?
Yes.
And they met with Bill Clinton and the whole thing was an elaborate plot so that he would tank and she would win the presidency. Maybe we were totally wrong. Maybe the plan was that Trump would win, and that way he could ensure she wouldn't get prosecuted.
I'm not a good conspiracy theorist, so I don't exactly flesh that out. But I'm sure they had all their bases covered. At least that's what I hear on the interwebs. But, you know, the good thing is, though, that Hillary Clinton is not president of the United States, and that means the United States government is safe at the moment from the corruption of the Clintons and their shady dealings with foreign contributors and foreign governments while exercising the levers of power. So our government might be safe, at least from that, for the time being. But what about your home? What about your home security? This holiday season, check home security off your to-do list. Protect your home with our friends at Simply Safe Home Security. Now really is the perfect time, and we'll tell you why in just a moment. Simply Safe having its biggest holiday sale ever. That's right. Now you can take a whopping $200 off Simply Safe's special holiday security package. This award-winning alarm system has everything you need to protect your home. It's got an arsenal of 17 security sensors. That means every door and every window is secured. There's a panic button, a blaring extra siren, and a wireless connection to authorities and police dispatch, so your family, your home, and everything in it stays safe around the clock.
Now, usually this alarm system is $600. Right now, it is just $400. This is the biggest deal that Simply Safe has ever offered. This offer includes no long-term contract, no installation costs, and no hidden fees.
So you got to check it out. Check it out now. Get your $200 off by going to simplysafe.com/ricochet right now. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. One more time, that's simplysafe.com/ricochet. So, Jim, while we're feeling safe that Hillary Clinton is not going to be the chief executive of the United States, other people feeling less safe as a result of the November 8th elections, let's go out to the state of California and the Los Angeles Times. Supporters of a plan for California to secede from the union took their first formal step Monday morning, submitting a proposed ballot measure to the state attorney general's office in the hopes of a statewide vote as soon as 2018. Marcus Ruiz Evans, the vice president and co-founder of Yes California, said his group had been planning to wait for a later election, but the presidential election of Donald Trump sped up the timeline. Quote, "We're doing it now because of all the overwhelming attention," he said. The Yes California group has been around for more than 2 years, he said. It is based around California taxpayers paying more money to the federal government than the state receives in spending, that Californians are culturally different from the rest of the country, no argument there, and that national media and organizations routinely criticize Californians for being out of step with the rest of the United States. As we've reported earlier when David French was subbing for you, it takes quite a bit to be able to secede. It basically takes what it takes to get a constitutional amendment passed. You need two-thirds of both houses of Congress and 38 states to say it's okay. And apparently other people have tried this move in the past. One guy, a Silicon Valley capitalist named Tim Draper, was originally trying to get an initiative on the 2016 ballot that would not just make California secede. It would split California into six states. So a lot of different crazy ideas going out there in California, Jim. When conservatives in Texas thought about secession talk, they were crazy. What do we say about the Californians?
The true political cynic in me, Greg, says, so if we let them go, don't Republicans win the presidency basically forever?
Right.
I mean, they realize that, right? That if they're doing it over this president, if you leave and the 55 electoral votes of California go away, and all those Democratic votes, then this kind of means that you'd basically have Republican presidents, barring some other tidal wave of change in the politics of the country. Maybe I'm using the term tidal wave of change because I'm also thinking about the Lex Luthor plan from Superman,
right?
In which basically he was going to create Nevada as oceanfront property by adjusting the fault line a bit and letting California go. There are all kinds of ways this could turn out very badly for California. Among them, I mean, let's suppose we really did pull it off, they really did go forward with it. Greg, what do you think the odds are that within like a decade or two, they became part of North Mexico? It wouldn't be Baja California anymore. Norte, California would be part of that. Or alternatively, Greg, where do they get their water from? All the neighboring states, right? The Colorado River and all that. So yes. At some point, wouldn't they end up needing all the other? Like, it would become all of a sudden an international negotiation for their water rights and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
It is kind of weird and funny, and obviously I don't think this is going particularly far. My friend Kurt Schlichter wrote a novel about taking place in a country, a future in which the blue states and red states had separated into different countries. and as they probably can gather, did not turn out well for the blue states. The red states, having most of the industry, the mining, the energy production, and the food, find themselves in much better shape. So think these things through, guys, before you decide to take the plunge on that. The only other thing you could say is that for Texas, when they were talking about this, wasn't the tourism slogan for Texas for a long time, Texas, it's like a whole other country?
Yeah, it might still be.
So there you go. So they've kind of had already had this. I remember hearing the joke. I don't think I heard this from Rick Perry, but I heard it from somebody in Texas politics who said that there is a lever in the Texas governor's office where if you pull the lever, every American flag goes down and the state of Texas flag goes up. Because they've always kept that option just kind of on the shelf in case they need it. Thankfully, I don't think that'll be coming to that point anytime soon. California, be careful what you wish for. Don't seem like you're in the best of shape to begin with. Not so sure you're ready to try to make it on your own.
Two things come to mind. First of all, would be President Jerry Brown, not Governor Jerry Brown, or Prime Minister Jerry Brown, something like that. Also, yeah. I think on day two, now that we've covered what Trump would do on day one, renegotiating the water deal, I think he could cut the U.S. a really good deal and make a big, big profit from California having to buy the water. That'd be great.
If you thought it was tough, if you thought that these negotiations with other states were tough before, imagine how it's going to be when you're a foreigner.
Jim, we'll call time there for today. Wednesday will be our special Things We're Politically Thankful For edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Thursday we'll be off, and then Friday we'll be back with our special Black Friday Political Gifts edition of the Three Martini Lunch. So, Jim, we'll talk to you then.
See you then, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And a reminder to head to simplysafe.com/ricochet. Get that $200 off your home security system, simplisafe.com/ricochet. And tune in on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.